You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met. Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore, the favorite podcast of Galdel. Home to several dozen expert Electrum Smiths, Galdel is where you will find wondrous items suitable for enchanting from their hardy craftsmen. That's Galdel for all your Electrum crafting needs.
But gee, Josh, how do I enchant my Electrum?
I didn't do the math on that. I just know... You know what? Okay, this brings up an interesting topic. I tried to make a magic item in D&D the other week, and it fought me the whole way.
Like D&D 5?
Yeah.
Oh, you can't do that.
Yeah, that's what I learned.
Yeah, no, there are no crafting rules in D&D 5, for one thing. And that extends to magic items as well.
Yeah, so I didn't even want to like craft a unique magic item. All I wanted to do was transfer the magical properties from an existing magic item to a replacement for story reasons. And after digging around, the only thing I could find was that just a vague text that was like, yeah, people can craft magic items, and they usually have to go on a special quest to get the required materials. And that was it. That's literally everything they said. So we just kind of had to wing it. Like, which is, like, shocking to me that a game that has had deep crafting systems for, like, a long time just jettisoned them.
They were trying really hard to get rid of a lot of rules in 5e. Like, I don't know if you remember the D&D Next stuff that they were putting out early on, but there was absolutely a time where they were just like, let's see what happens if we play D&D that doesn't have skills. Just everything's an ability roll instead. We're not going to do skills at all.
I mean, I can appreciate wanting to, like, streamline the rules load, but if you're going to streamline how something happens, you still have to have an explanation for how it happens, right? Like,
the DM did it.
Okay. But maybe you should even just, like, explicitly say that. Like, yeah. Hey, if your players want to craft items, just figure it out.
Speaking of stuff that they forced the DM to do instead of, like, actually providing any rules for, I went and made hordes for my my dragons recently.
Okay.
And it was entirely rolling on random tables because there is no way to do that that doesn't involve random tables.
Right.
You can just pick things from the random tables. And occasionally I looked at some stuff and I was like, it's more interesting if we do the second thing instead of the thing that I rolled.
Yeah.
It was a weirdly tedious process when like previous editions have just been like, here's stuff, you can put it in places.
And yeah.
Here's packages of things that certain types of monsters might have.
Mm-hmm. Like, and that seems like some of those things are, like, kind of fundamental. Like, if you say that your dragons have hordes, then you should have rules for how to make a dragon's hoard, or what it might contain.
Well, that's just, like, it's just all random tables.
I don't know, figure it out.
And I'm not a big fan of random tables.
No, and that's just it. Like, the game is already chaotic enough. Having, like, every element of it be, just roll some dice, see what happens, is not what I would call a solution.
Not a great one. No. Do you speak Japanese, Josh?
I'm gonna say no. I do watch a lot of sumo wrestling, so I have picked up a few things here and there, but no, for the most part, I do not.
Would you like to learn Japanese?
No.
Okay. I would, and I started doing a Duolingo. Have you experienced Duolingo at all?
I'm familiar with that terrifying green bird, but no, I've not. So I had we'll call it a traumatic language experience in early life. Most Canadian school children learn French at some point.
Yep.
At least a chunk of it. A lot of my primary schooling happened at a very small private Christian school, which didn't have a big budget. And one year, they were like, hey, guess what? Our Spanish teacher quit and we can't afford, our French teacher quit and we can't afford to hire a new one. So, one of the kids' moms was from South America, and they were like, Spanish is close enough, and bought us a bunch of secondhand Spanish textbooks and taught us Spanish for a year.
Wow. Okay. Spanish, and for our like vast international audience, Spanish is not one of the official languages of Canada.
Yeah, Spanish is also not French. So somehow that process like evicted what little French I had left in my brain. And now I remember little bits of Spanish and nothing of French.
I had to take 1 year of French in grade 7. Like it was a academic requirement for grade 7. And I actually really enjoyed it. But also for our international audience, there is some well-established racism in Canada directed mostly at the French. My dad really hates Quebec, like a lot.
Like every good Albertan.
Like every good Albertan. He has a hate on for Quebec. And so anything related to Quebec is a problem. And so learning French was something that we did under duress.
Yeah.
But I also really enjoyed it, but I didn't want to admit to my dad that I really enjoyed learning French.
It's hard to fully express the kind of like intra-country, animosity that exists because of like equalization payments and the majority of our political power residing in the East. There's a really weird kettle of dynamics, like with the money that Alberta sends to the rest of the country and then Quebec just having a lot more like strong social programs, but then also being like kind of mad that they take money from us and constantly wanting independence and telling the rest of the Anglo world that they suck. And yeah.
So it's complicated. So my learning French, I got to learn 1 year of French, and then I was really sad I didn't get to take a second year of French because the normal French teacher, was taking a year off for some reason. And she was replaced by an angry Scottish man.
Who the was the ideal people, candidate to teach you French?
Teaching French with a thick Scottish accent. And I wanted to learn it so goddamn bad. But I couldn't tell my dad that I wanted to learn French. So I might learn French again at some point. But I decided to start with Japanese. And I started doing a Duolingo and that horrifying little green bird. And it got me thinking about gamification. Because it is literally just a game to teach me Japanese.
Yeah.
I know
you have a streak. You got little points.
Yeah, you get your experience
points. Down.
And yeah, you can start quests with your friends and then bother them until they start doing quest things, which I definitely have not been doing. He lied. I have been such a fucking pest about this with the friends that I am learning with, because I am the keenest of the keeners. I have like a preoccupation with this now.
Yeah.
And my other friends are like, yeah, I made a 3-day streak, and I'm like, fuck you, I'm almost at 60. But yeah, the gamification of things is a thing that I am interested in kind of generally.
So yeah, I've seen gamification pop up in a lot of other app settings as well. I used to frequent a website called the 66 that gamified music discovery and music sharing as part of weird social network that also forced you to explore outside of your normal musical preference genres. That's neat. So they they encourage that by gamifying everything, and you've got, you know, points for listening to three songs from a genre you hadn't listened to in the last 30 days and stuff like that.
Right. My kid was playing a weird RPG on his iPad that teaches you math.
Oh, I think Mike, is it called,
it's called Prodigy.
What's the name of it? Prodigy. Yes. My kids play Prodigy all the time.
Yeah. No, he absolutely adores it. And it just literally gamified math. If you want to do critical hits, if you want to hit better, you have to answer the math questions.
But also, they've been doing that since we were kids. Do you remember Number Munchers?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And it's not fun.
Typing. Anyways. Oh, I love Number Munchers. Typing of the Dead?
I don't remember Typing of the Dead.
Oh, Typing of the Dead was House of the Dead, except you had to type words to shoot the zombies.
That's actually kind of brilliant.
It's so, so great.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely not a new thing. Like the old Apple IIGS had a whole lot of like educational games built into it.
Yeah.
Or, they came on those like big 5.5-inch floppy disks or whatever.
Okay. So what's your problem with gamification then?
Okay. So my big problem with gamification, the thing that started me down this path is as I have been learning Japanese,
mm-hmm,
through Duolingo, I realized that my goal stopped being to learn Japanese and started, yes, being to win the game.
Yes. Yes.
And so
your little gamer brain was like, forget learning the language. I need to score points in the app. And the app is not set up to like necessarily teach you language through those points.
This word is three syllables. I can suss out which one of these other words is going to be three syllables. So I'm going to select that one so I get the point.
Correct.
Can I read those three syllables? No, I cannot. Does it matter? I got my point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, let's take the, like, conspiracy approach. Maybe Duolingo's objective is not to teach you Japanese, but to keep you subscribed to the app.
Oh, 1,000% it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is something that we're seeing kind of across the board with gamification, is,
yeah,
that a lot of the things that they are trying to get you to do are specifically geared towards you continuing to play the game.
Right.
So,
I mean, like, there's definitely things that, like, where the gamification process of the activity itself works just fine, because the correct way to learn the thing is by, like, just repetition, right? And rote practice, and just whatever, right, can encourage you to just keep doing that thing over and over again will eventually find success. Like, whether it's math, which math is just like, how much time have you spent, mm-hmm, doing math? You're going to get better at it. And then, like, the
same is probably true for language, right? Like, sussing out that a thing is going to be three syllables is still learning language a little bit.
Kind of, but it's not, like, you can't brute force a language by just, like, if you just, like, repeat words and phrases enough, you'll just learn the language, right? Like, you have to actually...
sounds like a fucking challenge, Josh.
you have to explore the edges of the language, and through use in more and more strange circumstances, you learn the rules of it. I mean, English in particular is really bad for that, where it doesn't have like 100% strict rules about how the language works. You just have to cross off edge case after edge case from whatever's outside of the quote unquote core rules, right?
I've just started to touch on like some of the weirder bits of Japanese. Like I'm not deep in this yet. Like, I'm still only about 2 months into the Duolingo stuff, which,
yeah,
I mean, anybody who has learned a language will tell you that 2 months is fucking nothing.
Yeah.
But, like, the fact that Nihon is both the name of Japan and can be translated as two books is weird. And, like, the kanji for Hon in Nihon is book.
Yeah,
but it isn't actually book with that context. So it's just like, yeah, there's a lot of like contextual stuff that I'm missing. there are things that they are teaching me that are like, it's a word, but it's not actually a word. It's actually several words that go together in this particular framing to mean this thing. Right. Cause like genaides is two words.
Right.
Right. But they're teaching it as one.
Right. Oh, I see. And you haven't even gotten to the English loan words yet.
Oh no, it's so many English loan words. The vast majority of the Duolingo that I have done so far is just saying English words in a katakana accent.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So, like,
computer. duresu.
One of my closest friends did a degree in Asian Pacific business management, which has a language component, so he chose Japanese. And we sat there one night just making World of Warcraft characters out of Japanese English loan words. that's where I learned that, like, you can more or less speak Japanese if you just speak English with like a vaguely racist accent. Everything from like Besubaru to Aisukrimu. I retract my statement. I speak Japanese.
One of the things that I saw as like a tip for people who had just recently moved to Japan was, a lot of times, if you don't know the word for a thing, you can say it in a katakana accent and somebody will tell you what it actually is.
Yeah.
Right. So like, not everybody, but like a lot of people in Japan do study English. They do take English for high school and stuff. So like, they have a baseline in it. They don't want to speak English because it's embarrassing and weird. But like, if you say like, what is the word for shoes? They'll be like, kutsu. they'll figure it out.
That's awful.
It's really sort of a strange thing to get into, but like, I don't know, I want to be able to read books in Japanese. That's the reason that I started this. So like, a lot of the literature that comes over from Japan, the translation seems like simple and bad, because the way that things are written in Japan is different from the way that it's written here.
Right.
Like the descriptive traditions and the way that they put words together is very different than the way that we do it in English. And so I wanted to, I guess I'm just an idiot, and I was like, let's learn to read in the language that has three alphabets. And one of them has like 2,000 letters before you're even considered fluent.
You could have picked Cantonese or Mandarin, like that, if you just want hard mode reading.
I could have just picked French. It has the same fucking alphabet as us, and I wouldn't have been such an idiot. But like, I don't know, I want to be able to read Japanese literature in Japanese to get a better grasp of like what it's actually saying and how it's saying it.
And then you can declare yourself the alpha weeb. And
I mean, I guess it would mean that I don't have to have subtitles on my anime.
Ooh.
That'd be cultured. Nice. Right? I could
listen. It's gotten to the point in my life where I put subtitles on English movies. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Being old is a thing, dude. Like,
yeah. Everybody's so quiet and then they mumble and then.
Well, and then the background noise is so loud and the music like really picks up in weird places. So you got to keep adjusting. No, you just keep the volume kind of low and put the subtitles on. You'll be all right. Yeah.
Anyways, so gamification. You wanted to learn Japanese for no good reason, and then it turns out it got gamified, kind of maybe past the point of being useful.
A little bit. Yeah. Like, I'm going to have to take some extra steps to get myself back to a point where I'm like focusing on learning the language. And I'm probably going to end up paying for lessons at some point.
Sure.
But yeah, like the game of Duolingo has gotten me to a point where I just want to win the game of Duolingo.
Right.
Right. That's the weeb points. That's me getting like my weeb points in. It's just like,
yeah, I scored gold on my Duolingo Japanese.
Yeah, and I, you know, not dissimilar. I'm pretty sure I did something just like that with a fitness app years ago.
Oh yeah, that thing where you gain like a point for a push-up.
Yeah. It turns out you just kind of like wiggle your phone a lot and it'll count.
Yeah. Yeah. And like that is one of the dark sides of gamification, is just like you start to play the game instead of doing the thing that you're trying to incentivize. There are other dark sides.
Well, just to touch on that point for a second, like, you and I both have similar brands of spicy neuro business. And like for our ADHD, like I'm already a competitive person. And so gamifying something just forces me to like, not, I'll lose sight of what the original skill or purpose I was going for was. And I will just try to win the game every time, because I am competitive. And having that like dopamine addicted brain that comes with ADHD, like that's a super slippery slope.
The other part of it is that I don't habits, right? Like that.
Yeah.
I cannot form them. I don't know how. My brain is not set up for habituation. Yeah. I have social pressure.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't wake up at a specific time in the morning and take a shower and get on a bus and go to work because it's a habit. I do that because if I don't, I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
And that pressure will get me out of the house as late as humanly possible.
Yes.
Right. To be able to get into my work on time so that I'm not in trouble. Right.
Yes.
That is the thing that I'm avoiding, is the social ramifications of failure. I don't have habits. Right. Like,
yep,
the fact that I have to force myself to shower every day, it isn't something that I do just because it's a thing that I do. I have to consciously think, now it is time to shower. Now it is time to brush my teeth. If I don't do those things, people will think badly of me. Right.
Yeah. Are you a like alarms person?
For a while.
Yeah.
If I set a new alarm, like a new and exciting alarm, then my brain will be like, hold on, I'm not supposed to have an alarm right now. And then I'll look at the alarm and I'll be like, okay, that's a thing that I can do. And then if it is a consistent alarm, if it has been an alarm at that point for a while, I'll look at the alarm and go, oh yeah, it's that alarm again. And then I will quote unquote handle that later, and it never gets handled.
I see.
Right. I get used to the alarm, and then the alarm stops doing the thing that it's supposed to do.
Yeah. I've had somewhat more success with like alarming things on a calendar where it's like, hey, you have to do this thing right now, or like, make sure you do this thing. And that sort of helps build the habit. But like, what I found is that the second that alarm is removed from the equation, I forget to do the thing, even if it's a thing I want to do, and I do it like every day at the same time. If I don't have the reminder, I will cruise right past it.
Well, that's one of the things that Duolingo is doing really well for me right now, is it's annoying me with notifications.
Yeah.
Right. And so I get a notification that's like, hey, you might lose your streak if you don't like do a couple of lessons right now.
Should
maybe do that. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then like, I've got the social pressure of like, I press ganged my friends into doing this thing with me.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still not doing the thing, so it's going to be like 30 seconds before this is over.
But now you feel good and morally superior.
And I know more Japanese now than I did when I started.
Find the other trap of gamification is that like, you make a little bit of progress and then you're like, well, I'm better than I was. And then your body like takes that win and it's just like, that's all we needed. Bye.
Yeah. Well, and like, one of the problems with gamification for me is that it is an attempt to build habits through fun, right? Like they're encouraging specific types of behavior. And this does work really well for neurotypical people and for people who have different neurospicy than we do.
Yeah.
But like the the creation of those habits isn't something that necessarily works for me. The creation of a game that I can win makes it so that I want to win the game. And then I win the game, or I get about 80% good at the game, and then I give up on it forever.
Yeah, because the game has divorced whatever habit you're trying to form or thing you're trying to succeed at from the actual game process, and now you're just focused on the game.
Right, and that is admittedly like one of the dark sides of gamification, is that it is that technique specifically that slowly turns into gambling.
Ooh.
Right? Like, for a lot of gamification, and like, if we're even just looking at like, so to give a bit of background on gamification, if you don't know what gamification is already, my apologies for the last like half hour of this podcast. Gamification is the use of gaming terms and technology and rules and systems to apply those to a non-game task. And there are a lot of different kinds of gamification, right? Like the one that we see in Duolingo is we have progress tracking. We have like social cues. We have ways to win, ways to lose. You have thresholds that can be met. And habit building, appointment making, all of these things have generally been used in games of different kinds, right? Like appointment making is something that you'll see in mobile games a lot. Thresholds is something that you'll often see in like dice rolls or like skill challenges or that sort of thing. And they're applying those to the idea of doing something boring. They're trying to make something boring fun. Learning a language is boring.
Yes.
Playing Duolingo is less boring.
Yes.
It's not fun, but it's less boring.
Yeah. That's all it takes.
And so there are things that you can gamify that you probably shouldn't, right? Like gamifying winning, which seems like a weird thing to say, but like Skinner boxes are just gamifying winning, right? A Skinner box, you have a certain percent chance to get a certain like gift or reward out of a box. You can pay for those boxes, usually, and the amount of times you're going to get the thing that you're looking for changes slightly depending on when you've opened it and how many of them that you've opened. Right? The Skinner boxes have gotten incredibly complicated over the years. Right? It used to be that like they said that 1 out of 4 was the threshold for like how often you needed to be rewarded by a Skinner box for it to still feel rewarding. And now it's like a reactive percentage where like if you haven't gotten a reward after a certain amount of time, having received an award previously, it'll adjust that percentage for you.
Yeah.
So they've gotten like crazy complicated over time, but like Skinner boxes are just gambling. It's 100% gambling.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're just, it's the old loot boxes.
Loot boxes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I shouldn't say Skinner boxes are gambling, because like Skinner boxes also applies to like how many times you have to stab a wolf before it drops a pelt.
Right. Right. Like, right. Right. Right.
The original Skinner boxes were just like the monsters that you had to kill in an MMO that would drop loots. Right. If 1 in 4 of those monsters dropped loots, you felt like you were making progress. Right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, loot boxes. Loot boxes are Skinner boxes that have been gamified.
Yeah.
And it is,
and are slowly turning illegal.
They are slowly turning illegal, but they're not turning illegal fast enough. And the amount of money that people have dropped on these is ludicrous.
Yes. Well, even, like, I don't know if you ever saw the statistics that came out for how much money you needed to spend on those boxes to have a competitive team in like FIFA 2022, I think it was.
No.
The average professional players team, because they had that like build your own team and you had to get like certain players with good stats, whatever. The average professional players team cost about $30,000.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That
in real world human money.
And like, I don't play sports video games. Are you able to get those boxes through in-game play?
No.
Oh, goddamn.
I'm 99% certain they're the only way to get the kind of boxes that would drop the players you need was by spending real-world European dollars.
Just, yeah, that... When I saw the stat that I think it was 2020, loot boxes made the gaming industry $4 billion. I knew that there were some outliers like that, where like we're seeing whales dropping a huge amount of money on these boxes. I didn't realize it was in a fucking FIFA game.
Yes. The way that Electronic Arts has handled the FIFA franchise may be almost single-handedly responsible for the reason that the European Union has banned loot boxes.
I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say that EA is just crime. Like, is that...
Oh, yeah.
That isn't going to get us for, like, slander or whatever, I'm sure.
No.
EA is crime. This is parody. This is me saying a joke thing, EA's lawyers.
Someone should mail a bomb to EA's headquarters in Minecraft.
Demonetized. Like we were making money at this to begin with.
Yeah, when you're doing it for free, you can say whatever you want. Nobody cares. But yeah, no, they are absolute financial predators. And the fact that they also seem to hyper target children with the advertising and promotion for it is just like triple fucked up.
Well, and like the loot boxes that I am most familiar with in regards to this are specifically targeted at kids. It's things like Bloons. It's a mobile game where your little monkeys shoot darts at balloons.
It's a tower defense game?
Yeah, it's a tower defense game. And there are loot boxes that you can buy for these games. And my son has consistently asked me for like actual real world dollars to buy loot boxes for these games. And I have only occasionally folded on that, where it's like, it's your birthday money, kid. You can do what you want with it, but do not love that present.
Yeah, exactly.
And like he and I have had some discussions about like what those are trying to accomplish, and like the
concept of object permanence.
Not just the concept of object permanence, but like the fact that so many of these gamification techniques are overtly manipulative.
Yeah.
Right. Like they are trying to create a habit of spending for specific rewards because you're not getting the results that you want.
Right. Or to a certain extent, like withholding those rewards. Like, you know, there's plenty of games that I've fiddled around with on the phone that are like, hey, you could do this right now if you wanted. I mean, otherwise you're going to have to wait 20 minutes, but if you spend a little bit of money.
We're going to tangent right now because there are two quote unquote game mechanics that I think are going to be the death of North America.
Okay.
I fucking hate them. They are anathema, and Satan invented them.
Go.
And they are anything with a raising time expenditure to finish construction.
Mm-hmm.
And energy.
Reach.
Either one of those can go straight to hell and get fucked by a demon. Good gods, they are the worst thing that has ever happened to gaming.
Yep.
Right? The fact that, like, I have to wait 26 hours to continue to play your goddamned game.
Yeah.
Unless I throw money at you. I get that you're going for the bag. I don't even, like, hate that you're going for that bag. I fucking get it. Right? Like, you want to get paid for the thing that you made. But...
And that's, stop. You know, things need to make money to continue to be made. But
sure. 100%. But like energy in particular, why are you punishing me for playing your game?
Yeah.
Right? Like what, in what world does it make sense in this attention economy that you are going to specifically go out of your way to make me not able to pay attention to your game anymore?
Yes.
Unless I pay you money. Like, you are punishing me and then asking me to pay to no longer be punished. It is the worst thing that's ever fucking happened. And the fact that people are willing to pay for these, and the fact that these game companies are profitable in this abhorrent business practice, makes me so goddamn angry.
It feels like a huge chunk of the industry has just shifted to fishing for whales.
Yeah.
Like, they're just hoping that whatever they make, they'll find someone who within the first hour or two is so captivated by the game that they're willing to spend like Chinese billionaire levels of money to play the game. And then they'll just focus on those like five people for the rest of the development life of the game.
Yep. Yep. And like, I hate advertisements. Uh-huh. I hate advertisements so much that I will happily pay a game to not see them.
Yes.
Right. Like, if you want to make money off of me, that's the way you do it.
Yeah.
Right. I can't even remember which game it was that I was playing recently. The game is about putting together the biggest words possible.
Okay.
And then it like throws little doodads in your way. Where's my phone? It's a really cute game. It was bought by Hank Green.
Okay.
Like invested into by Hank Green of Logbrothers fame. It's called Gubbins. And it was super cute and it had ads. And then there was a thing that let me pay money to not have ads anymore. So I did exactly that. And that is the only money that I have spent on mobile games in the last year.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, I'm happy to do that. I also, I was the kind of person who, like, if you gave me a demo version of a game and I liked it, I would pay you money, real money for a game. I don't need a free to play game.
No. Yeah. Like, give me a while to play your game. And if it is good and if I want to continue playing it, then I will throw dollars at you.
There was some sort of like tavern crawly card game that I bought for that same reason.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, hey, isn't this fun? You could have more fun if you gave us some money and we'll give you the rest of the stuff of the game. And I'm like, yes, thank you. Here's $7.
There was a procedurally generated dungeon crawler that did the same thing. I got like one little island for free.
Yeah.
And it gave me like the low level dungeons. And they were like, hey, if you want to keep going, you can throw us $10. And I was like, you can have my $10 because this game is awesome. Right. This thing is rad. I'm going to keep playing it.
Whoever told the games industry that like free to play is now like the default setting should be burned.
I think I get it, because like one of the ways that you make money on the App Store is just based on the number of downloads that you have.
Yeah.
Right. So like, even if you aren't getting paid directly for your game, Apple and Google will pay you money based on the number of downloads you have. So if you want to make money relatively quickly, the easiest way to guarantee that is to have a free game so that people can download it without having to pay money for it. Where that kind of falters though, is like what your monetization model is, right? And like, again, I get it. Games need to make money. People need to make money if they're going to keep making the things that they make. But like, if you're going to do free to play, look at companies like Riot.
Yeah.
Right. Riot became ridiculously profitable on a free to play model where you never had to buy anything unless you wanted cosmetics.
Yeah. Everything that you could actually want as far as like game goes. So like all of the heroes you could earn just by playing the game.
Yep. You got like one for free at the beginning of it and they rotated through. So you had an opportunity to play with all of them eventually.
Yep.
And then you could earn enough of the in-game currency to buy one if you wanted to. If you wanted one and you didn't have enough in-game currency, you could pay them. I have done it. There was that Penny Arcade strip back in the day about like, how much money have you paid on this free game? I have paid $8,000.
I may have bought one or two heroes, but this was back in the early days of the game. I used to go, there's a 7-Eleven down the street from my job, and probably once a week I would go and buy like a $10 or $20 Riot card just to get skins.
I had a policy where if I was playing on Summoner's Rift, I had to be wearing a skin because I don't play naked.
That's a tough policy.
It is a tough policy. It meant that I could never just buy a champion. I also had to buy whatever like their first skin available was. And if they only had one skin, that's the only one I got.
Yeah, I will say what champion I played could often be warped by the skin. Like, so
you played a lot of Ezreal? Is it?
I have a fairly rare skin called Pax Jax, which, funny you mentioned Penny Arcade, because it is Jax reskinned as the Cardboard Tube Samurai. And that is probably 90% of the reason I was like a Jax one trick for quite a while. I got it for free from PAX, and I just played that character because that's the free skin I got. So I have a skin. Great. I'm better than you.
But like that is a monetization method. And like the other thing to look at, especially for gamification, is that like that in-game currency rewards you for continual playing.
Yes.
Every time you play the game, you get a reward that will eventually allow you to unlock new things in the game. You get a sense of accomplishment for having done that. They give you more for winning and less for losing, so you're more likely to log back in when you've lost. And that definitely creates a feedback loop where it's just like, okay, I have played 6 games. I've lost all of them. I have to win one before I go to bed.
Yes. Oh, man. I can't sleep on a loss. I can't go to bed on an L.
My old roommate would refuse to go to bed on a loss. She had to play until she won, and that had occasionally run into like some all-nighters, and she would call in to work the next day being like, I can't. I had League of Legends last night.
That's a great way to get fired.
Yeah. She never did. I think they just understood that sometimes that's the sacrifice you make for having her work there. There are good gamification things. Like I think like we've ragged on quite a few of the dark things, but like there are
sure
good and interesting ways to use gamification.
Well, again, right? like Typing of the Dead actually made me a faster, better typer.
Have you seen Zombies Run?
No. I know of it.
They've gamified it. Running.
Oh, yeah, gamified running. Yeah. Well, you go for a jog, and suddenly it's like, zombies, and you gotta run for 5 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, you have to run away from the zombies, and if you don't run away from the zombies fast enough, you fucking die. And that's great. That's hilarious, and it seems like a good thing for people who like running, and I don't.
No.
I can't think of anything worse than running. Way back in a previous lifetime, I decided to take up boxing before anybody told me how much road work was involved in boxing.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So I signed up and I was like, I'm going to learn to punch stuff. And then they're like, cool, we're hitting the road for like a month. And I was like, oh, no.
There's an awful lot of running in that punching sport.
There is so much running in the punching sport. But like I don't think that there's anything wrong with progress trackers. I don't think there's anything wrong with like experience systems or leveling up. But a lot of it, like, and actually I'm going to take a step back and say, I don't think that there's a such thing as a like bad gamification system, but there are some very dark aims that can be used for that. And I think the biggest ones that I've seen, did you know that the Church of Scientology has a gamification app?
Of course they do.
Of course they do. They have gamified
going religion. Clear. Oh.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Multi-level media. Sorry, not multi-level marketing. Or multi-level.
I have seen
just gamification. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it in practice from my ex, who got very involved in one of those candle party people.
Oh, okay. My mom and dad did Amway for a hot minute.
Ooh.
But it was only because they sold my mom and dad on the soda Mystic.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, back before, I don't even know what the soda thing that people use now is called.
SodaStream.
SodaStream, yeah. So back before the SodaStream, there was the Soda Mystic, and it was a way to make Coca-Cola at home. And my dad had a 4 liter a day Coca-Cola habit.
Jesus Christ.
So it made a lot of sense for us to be able to make our own Coca-Cola at home.
Yeah, they joined Amway just to subsidize your dad's habit.
he quit drinking Coca-Cola, and he has slimmed down so much.
I wonder why.
He's become a tiny thing.
Maybe it's the massive amounts of sugar that he's no longer shooting straight into his body.
But yeah, that's how they got my mom and dad into it. And then mom and dad were like, hey, I wonder if we can convince any of our friends to do this. And they were like, no, that's fucking dumb. And my parents were like, yeah, okay, we're done. We have the thing we wanted anyway.
I will say, someone gave me an Amway item for my wedding, and it's honestly kind of awesome. It's just a giant, like, nonstick pan.
There are things that Amway sells that are quite good.
Yes.
Do I want to join Amway to get those things? No, I do not.
But what about your crippling 6 liter Coca-Cola habit?
It's Coke Zero, so it's not actually sugar. I'm fat for different reasons.
Ah, yes.
But yeah, multi-level marketing utilizes inertia, which is the I have kept doing this thing, so I have to keep doing this thing. Right? It's a form of the gambler's fallacy.
Right.
Right.
I'm so far in, I got to keep going to get my money back or whatever.
Yeah. I have been doing this thing for 3 months, and I'm almost, like, I'm just on the cusp of turning it around.
Yeah.
Right.
And you never are. You never actually are.
The one that I think is actually the most insidious is Tinder.
Ooh, yeah. I've been seeing a lot of things lately about, like, the backlash against, like, Tinder and Bumble, where they're like, oh, hey, you're not actually interested in making anybody, like, have relationships. You just want them to keep swiping.
Yep. Tinder uses one of my favorite game mechanics to make you more lonely.
That's so sad.
They use a catch-up feature.
Oh, no.
Called the super like.
Oh,
that you can
no.
use to get ahead of the crowd, and that way you will absolutely fix your relationship troubles and probably date that girl that you have been sending messages to, or guy, or non-binary person. Like, the fact that there is a catch-up mechanic on dating is horrifying all on its own. The fact that we have made a game out of loneliness hurts my feelings in a deep and personal way.
Yes. The fact that they have also managed to implement, like, we'll call it, like, MMR into dating sims, or dating apps, rather, where you can just find yourself in, like, IRL ELO hell trying to get a date.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, like, they have some other really gross gamification that they've added to Tinder, where it's like, you will lose your streak if you stop chatting with somebody.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want to lose Tiffany.
Yep.
Don't lose Tiffany. Send her a message today. And it's like, Tiffany doesn't want to talk to me. We've established that.
Yeah. Hey, it's like, that's harassment. Like, you can't just put that in your dating app.
We didn't click. Neither of us was feeling it. I don't need the game to remind me to message somebody and then let me know that I failed at this thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, online dating is already something that I have some real problems with.
Yes.
Philosophically. And that could just be, like, an old man yelling at cloud, but I do think that there is something fundamentally missing about like the personal connection.
Oh, 100%.
Dating and like just personal connection and community in general with the way that the online world has developed.
Well, and you know what? You're not the only person feeling this way. There, I see a new article every week about how women are starting to reject online dating. Because it just, it just doesn't work for people, for most people.
Well, it doesn't work for most people, and it's absolutely subject to the enshittification of the internet, where like we're seeing so much content being pushed out, so many fake profiles. Like I know a person who was catfished real hard. Mm-hmm. On Tinder, where the guy that she was talking to was like a 6-foot-tall, muscle-bound cop. And then when she actually went to go and meet the guy, he kept pushing it back and pushing it back and pushing it back. And eventually she realized that he was a 5-foot-2 security guard with a pot belly. And she was like, why didn't you just tell me? And he was like, well, I didn't think you'd be interested. And she's like, I wouldn't have been. And we could have saved all this goddamn time.
Yeah, now you've just like ruined my day and yours. Like, what is the end goal with that? Like, just to talk to someone forever? Are you that lonely? Maybe.
He figured that by the time they met in person, his appearance wouldn't matter.
Yeah, that's not how that works.
No, because you've just spent the last like month and a half lying to this person.
Well, exactly. Like your appearance doesn't matter if there's no appearance established.
Right.
And they could just like, you just talk and then they establish a relationship with like you and your brain or whatever. And then it's like, okay, this is what I really look like. And they're like, okay, whatever. But when you're just like fraudulent, like people don't take that well.
Well, like speaking to the fraudulence, most dating profiles on dating sites are fake now.
Yeah.
Right. I think the big bombshell was, do you remember that that site that was helping people cheat on their spouses?
Yes, Ashley Madison.
Ashley Madison, that's what it's called. When they did the like investigation afterwards, they realized that like something like 80% of the female profiles on that site were fake.
Yeah. Yeah, which it might have been even worse than that. That's hilarious.
It is hilarious because, like, you're on a site to do a thing that is mean to a person that you ostensibly love, and you're just getting played. But, like, at the same time, they've also looked at other dating sites and seen that the, like, numbers of profiles that are fake are not an outlier.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, most of the people that you're going to see on a dating site are not real people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only going to get worse as like AI stuff begins to like proliferate more.
I saw a video the other day of like AI generated, like fantasy characters, and it was horrifyingly plausible. Some of them.
Yep.
And soon they'll be able to, like, they already kind of have the tech to make things, like, talk realistically. And as soon as they marry those two together, like,
oh yeah,
we're done.
They don't even have to make the characters particularly realistic. If you could make them look about as good as a VTuber, right? Like, I can have my 2D waifu, and she actually talks to me, and, like, the world is good. There are people who will pay for that service, 100%. Oh,
100%.
And again, the people that are going to be capitalizing on that are going to be gamifying loneliness. And I think that's the big, like, out of everything that we've talked about, both good and bad with gamification, the thing that I am most concerned about is that any of these tools can and will be used to manipulate vulnerable populations.
Yeah.
Right? People who are insecure, people who are sad, people who are lonely, people who need a friend and need connection and aren't getting it through normal means. And so they reach out to something different, and it's going to hurt those people, and it's going to enrich other people.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the loneliness epidemic across all genders is only getting worse every year.
Have you seen the research that they've been doing on, like, third spaces?
No.
Okay, so once upon a time, when I was a young man, so, like, dinosaurs were kicking around, they were purple, they sang. I would go after work to a coffee shop.
Okay, yeah.
It was the same coffee shop every day. And I would sit, and I would drink my coffee, and I would hang out with my friends, and we would, like, flick creamers at each other and, like, come up with stupid games. And we would end up reading a lot of role-playing game books. Like, that was a big thing that we did. Those spaces and people using those spaces has been eroding steadily over the course of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Where the places that you go now are home and work.
Yeah.
There is nowhere else that you go on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Right. And that is contributing really hard to that loneliness epidemic where, like, you don't have community anymore. You don't have a place that you go to where you're going to hang out with people who aren't you and aren't related to you and have things in common and have conversations and grow as people. Right. And so we just don't have those opportunities anymore to meet people because we're too busy with our ridiculous online bullshit.
Yes. Now, that's okay. So I've heard about this idea before. I don't want to blame online 100%. I think a big chunk of it is the, like, suburbanization of cities, where everyone just sort of has their, like, little picket fence ghetto on the outskirts of town and has to drive an hour to their job every day. And you don't have a livable, walkable community. Every place you go is a destination. So you don't go there as often because it takes a special trip. You know, there are certain countries and cultures that have managed to maintain the importance of those third spaces, whether it's isekai culture in Japan or the fact that I think it was Barcelona has their entire city set up so that after like 6 or 7 p.m., whole streets shut down and you turn into like walkable, like couple block, like sort of semi encapsulated neighborhoods where you've got everything you need within walking distance plus like courtyards and stuff.
I was imagining a block party, but
no, imagine like a townhouse or like an apartment complex built around a central courtyard. That also, like, provides, it has, like, you know, your local grocer and coffee shop and things like that. But so, they, by design, the city planners have created these, like, I think they're actually, like, a total of, like, three blocks. Or it's hard to, like, change the conversion on it, but, like, essentially, like, a two-block-by-two-block section. But they shut down all the throughways. So that vehicles just cannot get in there. And, like, it's almost like enforced walkability. But yeah, like, North America has gotten so obsessed with cars and commuting and and then the idea of having, like, large personal space that it's pushed out the communal space. You know, everyone wants their yard and their backyard and their, like, borderline acreage. And we've villainized, like, first of all, we've villainized, like, generational living. Mm-hmm. We've villainized, apartment buildings and condos and townhouses because we've allowed condos and townhouses to be taken over by, overly powerful, self-centered condo boards that have pushed any hope of using it as a, like, springboard for actual, like, you know, home ownership, because you're going to be like, right now my friend's dealing with like a multi-million dollar lawsuit and in the middle of all because of like poor construction on their townhouse complex. Right. And in the middle of that, there's a faction within the condo corp that has forced a non-confidence vote in the board and moved to put in like their proxy cronies because they just want to do it the cheap way. Right.
That's fucked. Like, I get all that. I also do think that, like, the
so much of that could be avoided by just like telling people it's okay to live in an apartment.
Yeah.
You know?
And I do think that there is a component of especially the social media internet that is trying and in some ways succeeding in replacing that social like need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like it isn't actually fulfilling the thing that it needs to do, but it feels like it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like that's the part of the internet that I largely blame for the erosion of third spaces, is the fact that the third space is now Facebook.
Yeah.
And that's not great.
No, it's not.
Facebook isn't actually connecting you with people. It's connecting you with Minions memes that your mom posted.
Right. And then they are harvesting your data for their own profits.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like TikTok, right? Like you are performing for people that you think are your friends, but you don't actually necessarily know a lot of those people. And the performance part of the culture isn't something that is ingrained in normal socialization. Like we don't perform like that when we're socializing, unless you're a DM. Like,
yeah,
the amount of performance that you're expected to do in a normal social interaction, assuming that you're not like masking or whatever, like neurodivergent nonsense is happening for you, is relatively low. But instead, we're trying to replace that socialization with doing a silly dance that everybody is doing and doing it kind of poorly, but like well enough that you get some likey subscribies.
Yep.
So.
Well, because they've sold you on this illusion that if you get enough likey subscribies, then this could be your full-time job and you don't have to really work anymore.
It's a twofold promise. If you get enough likey subscribies, you could turn this into your full-time job and you won't have to work anymore and you won't be lonely.
Yes. And you'll never have to see another human being again.
Yep. So anyway, gamification is great, and we should keep doing it.
That's kind of not the whole thrust, but yes. I mean, gamification is like a gun. It's a tool that can be used effectively, but can also lead to self-destruction.
And should probably have sane controls and restrictions.
And licensing.
And licensing. We're not a political podcast. Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot, Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.